So, letting go. It's been something I've been interested in all my life, really, in one way or another. And the ideas have been developing over the years. I suppose it started when I first got interested in meditation, which was TM, Transcendental Meditation, where the remarkable thing that Maharishi was saying, in sort of contrary to what every other teacher I'd met was saying, is that meditation should be easy, it should be effortlessness, and it's sort of just letting go of thoughts. It's not focusing the attention, it's relaxing. Whereas so many other teachings I've been following were talking about concentration, and you had to really focus the mind. And if you did this for years, then you might finally reach liberation or something. And his approach was so refreshing. And that was sort of my first sort of introduction to the theme of letting go. And then I just found it coming up again and again in my life. I got a lot from the Course in Miracles at one stage, and that's really, as I see it, about letting go of the ego's way of thinking and sort of coming back. It puts it more in Christian terms, but coming back to ourself and our own inner wisdom. And also, you know, later I got involved in, not really deeply involved, but I did quite a lot of Buddhist retreats, Tibet, not Tibetan, but more sort of spirit rock type. And there again, letting go comes up in Buddhism again and again and again. In fact, it was one of the key ideas that Buddha saw was that we suffer because we get attached to ideas of how things should be, what we want, etc. And so letting go of attachment was basically the way to end suffering and become liberated. So it's been there all my life. And I started writing this book actually years ago, but I clearly wasn't ready to. And I tried another couple of times and it just wasn't happening. Wasn't going very well. And then I suddenly realized just at the beginning of COVID, just before COVID struck, I realized, I know how to do this book. I want to do it as a series of very short little pieces, each of which sort of stands on their own and has its own sort of message. And I love doing that. I love writing short pieces where you can really work on them and sculpt them and make them into something. And so I thought, great. And I had January, February free, and I thought, good, I can start this book. And of course, come March, it's like, you're not going anywhere for a while, honey. So I had, you know, the first 6, 9 months of COVID free to just work on the book. And it's been going fairly nicely. So, yeah, letting go is really a theme which is in not just Buddhism and the other things I mentioned, but almost every spiritual tradition. It's there in one way or another, whether it's talking about surrender. Letting go of ego. Forgiveness is really about letting go, or you know, devotion, letting go of one's own needs, etc. So it comes up again and again and again. And almost universally, the reason it comes up is they say that holding on, our attachments, whatever it is, actually leads to suffering. It doesn't make us happy. And that letting go, when we let go, then we can actually taste the liberation, the happiness that we're looking for. And there's a sort of irony here because if we look behind while we're holding on to something, we're holding on to some judgment, some attachment, something we want, some feeling. If you look at it behind the holding on is some often this idea that if I just got this or stopped this happening, whatever it is, I'd be happier. That's what's behind the holding on ultimately is we hold on to something, some idea or whatever, because we think it'll make us happy or life will be better in some way or another. And the irony is that it's the opposite. The holding on just makes us tense, unhappy, suffering more. It takes us away from what we're actually really looking for. And that's why I sort of see letting go as not something we do so much, because I think a lot of time we're thinking that, you know, how do I let go of what I'm holding on to? And we think we're sort of holding on to, we think we're holding on to things. I mean, that's where it starts. And so one of the ideas that I think misinterpretations of letting go is about renunciation. You know, if I'm holding on to my attachment to, you know, money, I need to be give up all material things, become poor. Or if I'm, you know, holding on to you know, relationships or something, I need to become celibate or whatever it is. And that's sort of the old idea is you need to change things, you need to change your life. That, but it isn't that at all. It's about an inner change. And it's not even really about changing our emotions or thoughts. It's something much deeper, because behind any of our attachments is this thing that said, it's just that I feel if I hold on, I'm going to feel better. There's some sort of mindset, belief system behind our holding on, behind our attachments. And that's what we're really letting go of, is the mindset, the belief system, our way of seeing things. So we're not letting go of the things themselves so much as how we see them. And that's why one of the meanings of the title of my book is Letting Go of Nothing. It's like it's letting go of no thing. We're not letting go of the things, but we're letting go of the way we see them, which isn't actually a thing in itself. So that's one of the meanings of letting go of nothing. We're not letting go of things, but we're letting go of the mindset, our attachment to how we see them. And as I said, we often think letting go is, we think it's hard to do. People say, oh, I tried to let go, I just couldn't do it. And I think that's because we're already doing too much. We're doing the holding on. And so I see letting go as a relaxing. It's a relaxing of the mind rather than trying to change something or do something. It's actually stopping doing and allowing the mind to relax. And again, what we tend to do with, if we've got some say difficult emotion, feeling, because it's uncomfortable, we tend to push it away. We tend to push it to the back of our mind where we think it won't bother us, or we numb ourselves to it, or we think about something else. So our sort of common, almost habitual response when there's something that's disturbing us, we feel we want to let go of, we try to push it away, get rid of it. But I think we all know that doesn't really work in the long term, because it's sitting there in the back of our mind somewhere. I think it was Jung who said, what you resist persists. It means what we don't let into our consciousness keeps there, keeps sort of nagging at us in the background. So that's led me over the years to come to a different approach, which I call letting in and letting be. So I reframe letting go as letting in and letting be. Lots of people have talked about letting go as letting be, including the Beatles, of course, but often what they see there is letting the situation be. Like if there's something going on that's disturbing you, it's like, oh, just let it be, don't worry about it. So that's what it normally means by letting be, is just don't worry about it, leave it there. Yeah, my approach to letting be is almost the opposite. It's about, if you're worrying about it, letting that in, letting the experience, letting the feelings in. And so I see the first step is letting in, which is allowing yourself to notice what is happening. So if you've got some, say, you know, you're upset at somebody over something they did or something, is just to notice, coming to the body first of all. I think the body, we tend to always go, not always, but often go to our head to solve it. Come to the body and say, okay, what's actually going on here in the body? What am I noticing? What sensations are there? To actually let the actual body feelings in. And it's interesting, with an emotion, we use the word feeling both for a body sensation and for the emotion. You know, I'm feeling angry, whatever. So it's about opening up, letting in what's going on in the body, noticing that, and allowing it to be there, not trying to change it, just saying, okay, this is what's going on, this is what I'm noticing, allowing it to be there. And as we do that, we tend to soften the resistance. Often we resist experiencing it, but by letting it in, we're allowing the resistance to soften. And we'll often find the actual sort of the feeling itself begins to soften as well. And the other side of any emotion is there's always a story to it. There's something we're telling ourselves, you know, what this person did, whatever. And we can apply the same principle there, just letting in the story. What am I telling myself about that person? What do they do wrong? And as we do that, what often happens is there can be a loosening of our attachment to it. It's like, well, yes, well, What were they thinking? What was on their mind? You know, do they have a bad night? Whatever it is, what's going on with them? Instead of just saying this person is blah, 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 we can begin to put ourselves in their shoes. So that's how I approach letting go in many different areas. It's this principle of allowing in, letting be, which is really, as I see it, creating the right mental conditions, you could say, in which the letting go can begin to happen of its own accord. As I say, we don't do the letting go, but we can create the mental environment, if you like, whereby we can begin to relax and allow the letting go to happen. And I've been talking about here is emotions, but I apply that to many, many other areas in the book. And one of the things I thought I'd focus on more today is, I suppose, what comes up in many traditions is letting go of ego. And that's probably one of the fundamental things that comes up in spiritual traditions is ego and how we need to let go of ego. And again, that often becomes like the ego is some enemy. We've got to conquer it. We've got to transcend it. We've got to, whatever it is, get rid of it. I don't see the ego. Well, first of all, I don't see the ego as some thing. You know, we use a noun for ego. There's something called ego. If I look inside myself, I don't find a part of me called ego. I don't find some separate self that sort of comes in and starts taking over. I don't find something called an ego. What I do find is, well, first of all, that sense of self beingness that I've talked about in other sessions, that deep sense of presence, of I, that's always there, that sort of the transcendent self, it's sometimes called, or just the pure being awareness. And along with that, I find lots of egocentric thoughts, which I get caught up in. And that's where what we call the ego is. It's a thought. It's a way of thinking about the world, which generally is about how we can get what we want, how we can be safe, how we can be secure, what's going to make us happy, how to avoid danger, etc. And in some respects, it's a very natural, useful way of thinking. If you know, if there's if some physical danger or something, it's really important that we look after ourselves, look after our well-being, keep ourselves safe. So in that respect, this way of thinking is not an enemy to get rid of. It's an ally. It's something there that is trying to help us, really. The problem is that it gets triggered in most of our lives where there's no actual physical danger or need, but it gets triggered over something we imagine might happen or something we want or don't want or whatever. And it comes in. Once it gets triggered, it's there and it takes us over. We get caught up in that way of thinking. But I say it's a way of thinking. I like to actually use the verb rather than noun and say not so much my ego is doing something, but I am egoing my way of thinking. I am egoing in that moment. And if we look at ego that way as a process, a mental process we get caught in, a thought system we get caught in, then letting go of ego isn't about getting rid of it or whatever. It's about letting go of that thought system in the moment. And so when we notice it, you know, a lot of the time we're caught up in it, we don't notice it because it's taking us over and we get caught up in what it's insisting that we do. We must, you know, speak to this person about whatever it is. But when we recognize it, then we can have the choice just to pause it for the moment. As some of you know, I mean, I'm a great fan of pausing. Whenever we notice, you know, we're caught up in something, just to pause the thinking. And that's somewhere where I think, you know, we do have choice. We can just pause our thinking. And when we do, we're in a sense stepping out of the ego in that moment. And what I notice when I do this, when I just pause, is really two things. One, the present begins to reveal itself again. I notice I was totally caught up in this egoic way of thinking, and I pause. It's like, ah, oh, there's the sound of the raindrops again, and there's the sound, oh, the sound of that fan. I notice the present moment, it begins to reveal itself again. But also, I think more importantly, is like, I come back, it's like, ah, there's always a sense of ah, a sense of relief, a sense of coming home. And you know, that's what all the traditions are talking about in a way. When we do step out of the ego, you know, we come back to the present, being here now, as Ram Dass put it beautifully, and we start coming back to our, closer to ourselves, to our true nature, coming back to that quality of ease and relief in ourselves. So I see letting go of ego as a process we can be doing all our life, and maybe it never ends, but just catching it, catching it. And as we do, I think the motivation to do so builds, because each time we do, it's like that sense of that sense of relief, here I am, begins to build up, and we get the sense of yes, I should remember to do this, because it really helps. And something else I want to say about ego before we pause is, and I haven't actually written about this yet, I was going to write about it before I finished the book, but I never did. If you see ego as a mindset we get caught in, then all these different ways of thinking each have their own sort of shade. I was going to write a section called 50 Shades of Ego. And what I mean by this is, if your mindset that you're caught in, that you want to let go of, is the mindset is something to do with, well, say what I was talking about, you know, being upset at somebody. If you look at that way of thinking when you're upset at something, there's a sort of felt sense to it inside, not just how it feels in the body, but there's a felt sense in the mind of how that way of thinking feels. It's hard to describe, but I think if you explore that in yourself, I know it, when I started noticing this a few years ago, it became fascinating to explore how a particular thought system, a particular way of thinking, had its own sort of felt sense. And if another way of, you know, egoic thinking was about the something I must have or something I must do, completely different thing. And when I tuned into that, there was another sort of felt sense to the ego, into the ego mind. And I've just found that fascinating, that when I do notice I'm caught in it, which, you know, I'm going to say is a lot of the time it happens. I'm no perfect enlightened human being. I'm just somebody on my own journey practicing. But when I notice not only, you know, what's going on in my body, but, you know, what's going on in the head as well, but when I notice, how does it actually feel? It allows me again to allow in more that particular shade of egoing that's happening at that time. And one of the things is there's always some slight sense of tension with it, a felt sense in the mind, not just in the body, but a felt sense in the mind of tension. And this I see is really the hallmark of egoing, is there's some sense, slight sense of tension. And that's a good way to sort of spot when we're possibly caught up in this way. It's like, if I notice there's some background sense of tension in my mind, it's like, okay, let me look. Maybe I'm caught in something here. Or another way is a sense of insistence, which is also part of the tension. But the, you know, the ego mind, its job is to keep us safe, and it needs to be insistent. You need to do this or not do this. And when there's that sense of insistence, like, don't look at it another way, this is what you've got to do, when I notice that sense of insistence, that's always a good sign that, hang on, I'm probably getting caught in a certain mindset here, a certain way of seeing. So that's what I just want to talk about briefly, is seeing ego not as something, but seeing it as a way of thinking we get caught in from time to time, or maybe quite a lot of the time. But seeing it as that, as a thought system, as a way of thinking, it's much easier to be practicing. We can step out of it. We can let go of ego 100 times a day, 1,000 times a day, whatever. But it's a practice we can continually be doing rather than some goal we're striving to achieve. So time is going on. What I always like to do is just have a short short meditation, just to really take some of what I've been talking about inside into practice in ourselves. Won't be long, but just 5 minutes. I'll finish. I'll ring a bell to finish, and then we'll open it up for questions, discussions, see what people want to explore. So I like to just switch off my video while I'm doing this. It just allows me to be more sort of internal in myself as I settle in. So I suggest just, if you want to just close your eyes, you don't have to, but just close your eyes, I suggest, and just take a few deeper breaths, just relaxing. The key to all of this really is about relaxing. Just letting the body relax as you breathe out. Just let the body relax. Let the weight go. And just noticing your experience in the moment, whether it's sensations in the body, the rising and falling of the chest as you breathe, sounds around you, little thoughts popping in and out, feelings that might be there, but not focusing on anything in particular. In this sort of practice, we're sort of just letting our awareness soften. And often our awareness is focused in on something, zoomed in on something that we're interested in or focusing on. I think of this practice more as the opposite of zooming out and just letting, not focusing on something, but just zooming out and having a more open awareness of just allowing everything to just be as it is for the moment. Know where we're trying to get to. Nothing we're trying to do so much. It's just opening our awareness to what is. And you'll notice from time to time, we get interested in some thought, the attention gets caught up in some little thoughts crept in. And when you notice that, as in most techniques of meditation, we just come back to being present. What I'd like to suggest is also just noticing probably how that thought is in some way, some reflection of egoic thinking, you know, my life or the world or whatever it is would be a better place if I follow this thought through. But we're just letting it go for now. And noticing if any faint tension has crept in with it. And then just, if so, just letting the attention relax again. Just letting it become soft. And as we do, we just drop back towards ourself again. And as we do, just noticing any sense of ease or relief that comes as we just let go of that holding on. We're just letting go of any expectation, any goal, letting go of anything to do. And just noticing how it feels to let the mind relax and just be here in this moment. And I also like to suggest to people in this just to allow an inner smile to be there. It's just a way of saying to ourselves, it's okay, this is nice. A sort of recognition just how it feels when we begin to let go. And just continue for another minute or so like this. And as I said before, just don't rush out of meditation. It's always good just to gently, slowly come out. So just maybe just open the eyes a little bit if you had them closed, let a little light in. We gently return to just being here together. So what I'd like to do is half an hour left, or we can even run over a bit if we need to. Just any, first of all, let's see if any questions, Linda, anybody got things they want to explore? You're muted, Linda.
That doesn't work. We've got a question from Joseph Kuhn, and it's, yes. Can you be an activist and let go?
Good. Yes. 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 This is really an important thing, which I think often gets misunderstood. Letting go, you know, part of that, as we talk, is letting be, but that's about accepting, letting our experience be in the moment. So if there's something that's really upsetting you about something in the world that you want to change, it's not about not being active at all, but it's about this. So it's not about accepting the situation. This is the essential difference. We're not talking about how to, you know, accept the situation and let it be. We're talking about how to allow our experience to be. So if we're feeling indignant or upset about something, letting that in, noticing, oh, this is how it feels, or if it may even be rage about something, noticing how it feels. Because the more we can do that and be less resistant to it, but more just open to it, then partly I think we'll be in a better state of mind when we can sort of let go of that rage a bit to actually decide what we want to do in terms of our activism. And better come at it with in a way with greater clarity. So, but I say this is a really important point. It's not about just accepting, it's not about accepting the world. There's lots of things that, you know, we're each called to do in our own way. In some way or another, we are called to do something that's important to improve the world, some form of, whether it's political activism, environmental or social, or even just in our family or whatever. But it's about accepting what's going on inside us. Because if we resist things, what we tend to do is, as I said, we don't like the experience. We tend to resist these experiences, these uncomfortable experiences. We want them to go away. We tend to resist them. And the resistance just adds another layer. There's that saying, you know, it goes around, you probably heard it, you know, pain is inevitable, suffering is optional. You know, the pain, not just physical pain, but it may be pain at what you see in the world. That's fine. when we resist it, when we somehow want to push it away, the resistance itself becomes another layer on top of the whole thing. And it's the resistance which is uncomfortable. So if we can let go of the resistance, and what I find actually really useful, when we notice some resistance to experiencing something, first of all, notice how the resistance feels. And there may be some tension in the body, something else in the resistance. If we notice our resistance, notice how that feels, then that can begin to, it begins to soften and allows us again to be more in touch with what we're actually feeling. That's a slightly long answer, but the answer is yes, we can. I think letting go helps us in our activism. That makes sense.
Thank you, Joseph.
Did you want to say anything else, Joseph?
Maybe just extend the question a little bit. Okay. For me, what I've been coming to of late, because I'm very much an activist. I'm a semi-retired ecologist. I'm really into the climate change activist. I've belonged to about 10 NGOs that are trying to get governments to do something about. So that's a very stressful, emotional, somewhat ego-driven exercise. And what I've been learning from you and so many others, I have four or five top spiritual teachers, is that becoming more spiritually aware and more relaxed is more healthy. And I certainly don't want to do what I see so many of my friends and relatives are getting cancer and passing away. And I think a lot of that is driven by stress and being an activist and being, you know, concerned and upset about this, that, and the other thing. So it's the conclusion I'm getting from you and others is that I have to balance that go get them with connecting with my spiritual being and the creator's intent.
Yeah, yes, absolutely. Yeah, you're putting it very nicely. I remember when I was with the Maharishi, he used to have this analogy. When you shoot an arrow on a bow, good old Indian analogy, you pull the arrow back in the opposite direction for which you want it to fly. You pull it back to get more energy.
Yeah, I like that. And
it's what you say, it's balance. You know, if we just go at it, just go at what we see needs to happen, you're right, we just get more tense, we exhaust ourselves, maybe get sick. So it's how do we have that balance and just coming back, you know, having some period of time just to be quiet and just come back to yourself. It's nourishing. It's like nourishing yourself, gaining the clarity of mind, and just the rest. I mean, one thing that's known about, you know, meditation or just being quiet is it generally has the opposite effect in the body to the stress response. So you're beginning to relax some of that stress that's being built up for the activism. And also, you know, maybe, you know, from that, be able to see how to do that without getting, you know, so stressed in it, finding ways to be an activist that's actually not affecting your well-being. Yeah. Good, but it sounds like, yeah, sounds like you've got a sensible approach there. You've got the essence of it, I think. Yeah. Thanks.
Hi. Thank you, Joseph. I have another question, quite a few more, from Ron Elson. Can you please speak to, let's say we care about something deeply, an intention, a wish. One option is remaining unattached, neutral, pausing. I'm curious. We might also wonder if there's a third path, a non-binary way of gracefully moving toward it in your model, allowing it to be still how we might begin to approach a path to this? Or is this by its very nature an egoing problem? What might be mindful ways of flowing toward it, best I can do to describe what I'm wondering about?
Thanks, Ron. You always have great questions. You're unmuted. Nice to hear you. Yes. intention There's three things here, and when we, you know, when we say letting it in, letting it be, we're sort of we're letting go of the tension, the attachment that comes. That's a sort of that's that all occupying sense of egoing. But then the intention, we can still have a strong intention, and that could actually be a healthy part of the ego. You know, I said the ego isn't all, you know, it's an ally as well. And if there's some things which we really, you know, coming from a clear space, we really see that this is something that's really important, and it's not just coming out of a frustration or whatever, we really see with a clear mind, then that, you know, the egoing is like working things out. I think it can be a very useful tool in service of the right sort of goals. I don't know, does that make sense? Well, I mean, you always have very nice perceptions on things, perspectives. Anything you want to add in terms of what you were saying in the question? How you see things?
Well, I can try. I don't want to take up too much time because there's so many other people. But a continuation of Joseph's question for me that came to mind with his question is a slight variance, which is how can we help each other? If we're interested in building connection and community and not simply myself doing ecology or climate work or working in schools or whatever I'm doing, just beginning to think together about how we can support each other in doing this in a more collective kind of fashion. And we're aware that groups and people have an intention. There's something they care about deeply. And so we want to be facilitating that. We want to support that rather than bringing our own ideas into it and imposing them, even if they're good ones. So it's that kind of process. And it may not lend itself to this quick kind of conversation, but any thoughts that you have about that whole mess?
I don't feel, nothing I want sort of coming up at the moment that I really want to say, other than what I've said. You know, personally, I just love our long conversations when we get together. And I feel it's almost a topic for that rather than just say some quick answer now. That's okay.
Thank you, Ryan. Another very quick question. How do you let go of obsessions?
Of obsessions?
And that was put by Susan Jagger. I'll unmute her if she wants to.
Do you want to say something, Susan? It's always nice to hear you expand a bit upon the question, what you're getting at there.
Hi. Yes. Hi, good morning or good afternoon. I've been taking notes about what you said about when thoughts come in to pause and allow thoughts to come in. So my question is more like, what happens when the thoughts just keep coming in? And even though you allow them to come in, they just keep coming in.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure what to do with that, allowing them in, but they seem to just keep coming in.
They keep coming back again. Yeah.
Causing a negative impact on me, yes.
Yeah. I know that one. I've had that one at times. You notice a thought, you let it go, and 2 seconds later, it's hammering at you again. And then it's hammering at you again. I found one of the things is coming back to the body each time, just coming back to noticing what's happening in the body. And just in a way, if you're going to notice that those thoughts are going to have that effect in the body, and finding ways to allow that to relax in the body, I found helpful. I've also found helpful, and this is, you know, going against what I normally teach, but it's okay, is to actually start thinking about something different that has a more positive feeling, something that you really, something in life that you really enjoy, and thinking about that. So actually moving your mind to a different subject. I found that helps as well, in terms of, like, it interrupts that obsessive thought, keep coming back again. Go on.
I was asking, so in a sense, are you replacing the thought, or you're just, because you said you're not supposed to resist it, so.
Right, yeah. that's, as I say, I don't normally suggest this, but when it's obsessive, I've actually found, replacing a thought with something else actually has helped me let the obsessive thought go. Well, not let it go so much, but interrupting it, keep coming back. And then, looking at what is the obsessive thought? What's going on here? There's going to be some story, probably some big story behind an obsessive thought of why this is so important. And beginning to look at that, say, well, is this really this important? Is there another way of looking at the situation, to begin to sort of undo whatever the mindset is that's behind that obsessive thought? They begin to see, if it's about something that must happen, why is this important? To take a sort of more mental approach, to begin to see what's behind it, and then begin to ask yourself, is it really that true, or is there possibly another way of seeing this, which I found a very useful thing. Is there another way of looking at this situation and just seeing what comes up? But it's hard, I know. I mean, I've got caught in that at times. There's no easy solution. But those are some of the things that I found helpful.
Thank you.
Thank you, Susan. And this is actually kind of more on that. Besides an inner smile, are there other ways we can use our imagination to nourish our letting go? And that's by Susie, who I will unmute.
Susie, you there?
Yes. Hi.
Hi, Susie.
Hi, Peter.
So other than other ways of, say it again, it was always nice hearing it coming from you.
Oh, yes. I was just thinking about the role of imagination in our practice. And I know you mentioned using an inner smile, and I know Thich Nhat Hanh uses metaphors sometimes of a lake or a mountain. Something I don't remember our talking about. And so I was curious about using, the role of our imagination, even in obsessive thinking or other situations.
Yeah. I think, in that case, just talking about obsessive thinking, that is when I was saying, think of something that makes you feel
right. Good.
Yes, I think you can do definitely. But I suppose more for me, it's more important is coming back. We're looking to feel more at ease. And certainly, imagining things that lead to that works, but that's still a sort of conditional ease,
right.
A sort of conditional feeling good that depends upon that particular thought stream. Whereas, what I'm work with myself is like notice just coming more and more familiar with that sense of feeling good inside that's there when we take our attention away from, the disturbing thought or whatever. There's always some sense of like, there's some sense of like a bit greater ease, feels a bit better, relief. I sometimes talk about it as coming home. And to savor that, to savor it. So, it may not be a lot. It may just be a slight sense of, a little slight sense of feeling a bit easier, but then to savor it. So just allowing in that natural sense of, what I want to call it, relief. And so you allow that to become more familiar. Because if that's happening, I think what we often do is particularly in meditation, you're talking about meditation, we can be involved in the practice of meditation. And what we're looking for, not looking for in the meditation, but one of the benefits of meditation is we do feel more at ease.
Mm-hmm.
But where you can be caught up in the process of meditation and not noticing how it actually feels, the feeling of ease. And yet, that feeling of ease is part of the present moment. But we could be aware of our breath or the thoughts or the feelings, whatever, but at a subtler level in the background, that sense of ease, just noticing that, because it's there. We tend easily to sort of overlook it. So that's something that I find helpful. It's just savoring that, savoring how it feels.
Thank you.
Thank you, Susie. So I have a question that I've been thinking about, Pete, because what we're talking about now is once everything is coming into our consciousness and we're reacting and we're in the middle of just our daily thinking, living. But what about that part of the mind knowing the mind, about the practice? I practice in meditation, like trying to catch the thoughts as they're coming up from a feeling. So it's not that getting past that thought and then reacting. It's like that little tiny step before that we have a little bit of, I can become a little aware of it while I'm, you know, not just in meditation, but I'm trying to practice that. So what about that? The kind of, I think that's considered non-dual, but the mind knowing the mind.
Yeah. I mean, let's forget about the term non-dual here. You mean beginning to recognize when something's coming up?
Yeah, before it even grabs you and you get the unpleasant feeling gets into a reaction.
Right, yeah. So, I mean, obviously that's a good thing if you can do that. In meditation that becomes easier because when the mind becomes quieter, you can begin to notice the seeds of the thought coming in and sort of catch them and pause them more easily. In fact, the quieter you become, I think the more you can just catch those very early seeds of thought. I'm not quite sure what you're asking. I mean, how to do that better?
Well, or, if that's another practice to be working on besides just once the thought comes to, okay, like, yeah, seeing, yes, what is the ego really?
Yeah, yes, yes. I would say it's basically the same practice, but, you know, awakening to the fact you're thinking at an earlier stage, you know, rather than being caught up in a thought for 2 minutes and like, oh God, it's like catching it a second as it begins to appear. So I think it's the same process, just catching it and pausing it. And, you know, if you want to, you can always look and say, okay, where is this thought coming from? What's the mindset behind it, and seeing that. But I would say it's the same process, but you're just taking it back to a much earlier stage in the arising of the thought.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay. I have another question from Bob Harlow. Subtle tensions of egoing can have different flavors or feeling tones, maybe pleasant or unpleasant or neither. Allow all flavors, excitement, depression, fear.
Yes.
Unmute Bob. Him.
Can I see you, Bob?
Hi. Yeah.
Hi, Bob. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. You talked about, you know, noticing the subtle tensions. And depending on what kind of egoing you're doing at the moment, you know, you can be tremendously excited, or you can be nervous, or blah, blah, blah. Yeah. So you're still egoing, but you're noticing your egoing. And I guess what I'm getting from you is learning to notice the feeling of the egoing that is going on in the moment.
Yeah.
And letting that be. Yeah. Yes. That's what I'm hearing.
Yes, yes. It's another part of it which we don't normally look at because it's subtle. It's quite subtle, you know. To say the mind, you know, you can feel something in the mind. People say, "What are you talking about? How can a mind state have a feeling?"
Yeah.
But I found it does. I mean, you know, a very simple thing. You know, if you're really focusing on something, that has a feeling to it. If you're really trying to avoid something, it has a mental feeling to it.
Uh-huh.
So it's another aspect of the egoing that you can allow in. We talked about, you know, what's going on in the body, what's going on in the story, that sort of thing.
Right.
I just might, it's another way of, in a way, stepping back from it and getting a little distance from it, because any form of egoing, its job is to take you over because it believes it's right. And this is what you've got to do. This is what you've got to think about. This is what you've got to sort out. I've got to sort out what the leader of the country needs to do to make the world better, whatever it is. But just note, if you notice the flavor of each one, it's like, it's like a way of stepping back from it. This particular mode of egoing has a sort of like, shaky tension to it. This mm-hmm. one has a sort of urgency to it. This one has a sort of wanting to reach out to it. It's a way of just stepping back and becoming more familiar with what's going on rather than having it just run you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Yeah.
I have a very quick thing that I do have another question, but I wanted to say somebody said to me that I think I might have misspelled. It's Peter at Peter Russell with one R. She had gone to PayPal and done Peter at Peter Russell with two R's. So it's
that's okay.
One R.
That's okay. It just goes into a different account. That's okay. Don't worry. Don't worry. Okay. Thank you.
One of the last questions, unless there's more. Dan says, I find meditation is another way to being whole and not separate. Is this an appropriate description? And I will ask Dan to unmute. If he can.
Okay. If not, don't worry.
I'm here.
Okay, yeah. I would say, yes, it's a very appropriate description. You're saying the feeling of it is like becoming whole, you would put it.
Yes.
Yeah.
It is like not being feeling separate.
Right.
From anything.
Yes. Yeah, yeah. I mean, I think there's lots of different, you know, ways we can express what's going on. I mean, that's certainly one that's becoming whole. I mean, it might be a sense of becoming more spacious, more in touch with ourselves, or just noticing that the stillness, but definitely becoming whole is part of it. Yes. Yeah. Not separating yourself, not so divided in yourself. That's the way you're describing it.
Yes.
Yeah. Yes. Yes. I mean, whatever form it takes, is, you know, providing it's something that feels good and easy and relaxed, as opposed to something that's just increasing the tension. Yeah.
Thank you.
Great.
So there aren't any more questions in the chat, but I'm wondering if there's anybody online who doesn't know how to use the chat and wants to raise their hand either sure. by waving sure. or by yeah. raising their finger on the raise hand button.
Sure, yes. We've got a few more minutes.
And Ray, you go ahead. I'm going to ask you to unmute. There you go.
Yeah, I just was wondering about the experience that I had and how it relates to what we're talking about. Many years ago, I was on a motorcycle going down what was then Yugoslavia, and I wanted to get over to the middle of the country instead of next to the west coast of it. And so I decided to go up this road that I'd heard bad things about that would take me over these mountains to the middle part of Yugoslavia so that I could go down to Greece. And so I had to make a decision about it because it didn't seem like it was going to be that far in miles. But as I went, the road became more and more dangerous. There were sometimes 1,000-foot drops and the wind was blowing and it was getting later. So now the sun was starting to get darker and I got a little bit farther and it was all these potholes. In the road. It was just a poor road. And what would go on is I'd say, God, maybe I should have stayed in that last town and come up the next day. And all these thoughts and worries were coming in. And what would happen is suddenly I would be jarred like crazy because I went over a couple of big potholes. And that kept happening and my teeth would rattle and I was afraid my motorcycle would fall apart and I would just get so angry about the fact that it happened to me. And then a couple of thoughts came into me. One of them was, I'm concentrating on the big pothole. And I remember when I was riding a bike and we played this game where that if you wanted to run something over, just keep looking at it. And there I was looking at what I was most afraid of. And no matter what I did, I was going to drive right into it. And again, make even madder, you know, about everything. and more worried. And then I kind of got this idea. I said, well, wait a minute. What if I look ahead and first of all, not look at the thing that I was afraid of happening. And the other one was looking ahead and saying, now I'm bound to hit a pothole, but there might be a path ahead of me that I'll hit the minimum number of potholes instead of a lot of them, instead of 15 of them. If I take that route, I only hit three or something mm-hmm. like that. And I can, and so that became a really important insight for me, and it made it a lot easier. And in the end, you know, the metaphor that I did have a goal, I was going uphill and so forth, and I didn't know really where I was going. But, you know, at some point, the road turned to be all ice and big snow banks right on the two sides of me. And at some point, the ice gave way and the motorcycle went down, and I tried to get it up, and I was slipping on the ice. And it was, anyway, eventually I got it up. After, because I said, what can I do? I know if I go down, it's already getting dark, I'm going to really be in bad shape because it's such a dangerous road. So I decided to go up, not knowing how far up I would have to go. And I would say within about a half hour of pushing this motorcycle up the hill, because I couldn't get it started, I came across an inn and went inside to the inn. And this one man was there, and he said, oh, I speak English too. So it was a really nice time. We were drinking and throwing the stuff in the jars. He had a cabin, and I was able to sleep there. And so things worked out okay. But that insight about being able to predict something that would be minimum, even though I know I'm going to run into difficulties,
right.
Instead of just plowing ahead without being able to do that. I wondered how that fit into what you're talking about.
I think, you know, what you're talking about is a great metaphor for life in general. I mean, I think I'm sure, you know, many of us have experienced that. I mean, you know, what you're saying is, you know, if you focus on the obstacles, that's all you're going to see is obstacles, and maybe not seeing the other opportunities, not seeing the bigger picture. I mean, as you were talking, I just felt, yeah, this is a metaphor for life, and stepping back. I mean, I know I've had, I'm going to my story, the same thing, similar thing, but yes, you're letting go of you're letting go of the anxiety. You're getting anxious about the big potholes, and you're finding a way to actually let go of that anxiety, and probably were feeling a bit better for it as you did. And as always, I love the ending. You know, we never know what wonderful gift is going to come to us.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, the way I thought of it, in a way, was that I was taking some control over what I was going to be doing. It's like the activism question.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, I became an activist predicting the difficulties that I was predicting. I was looking ahead and predicting. That was one way I looked at it.
Yeah. Good.
Great. So thank you, Ray. I've got another question. I don't see any other hands raised on the screen. So the last question is going to be, does Peter see going for a walk to blow off steam when triggered as a form of meditation, from Tammy Dixon?
Yeah. Yes, it is a form of meditation. I mean, definitely works. I mean, you're taking first of all, you're doing something physical. You're taking your mind, probably taking your mind off it. It's something very useful. I mean, I wouldn't particularly use the word meditation. I reserve the word meditation more for like setting down, becoming quieter in oneself, but it's certainly a very valuable thing to do, certainly.
I guess I was, because when I'm lucky enough to be spending some time with my 88-year-old mother right now, which is, you know, hard and great at the same time. I mean, she's still giving me some of the same messages from when I was a kid, but I'm seeing them now without as much anger and as about, you know, the resentment and all that kind of stuff. But once in a while, you know, it's like slam the door, go for a walk. So I guess I'm thinking, you know, after I go for a walk, sort of blow off like that physical energy, then I find I feel I'm sort of meditating, and then I can come back with more compassion. Yeah.
In a way, it's this thing of, it's another example of choosing not to follow that particular
reaction
line of thought for a moment. It is choosing to step out of it by physically stepping out of it.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you.
Great.
Thank you.
Okay. Well, it's no more. We're a bit over time. Not that I'm worried about time particularly. I'm always happy to go over. So if there's nothing else, no other hands raised, let's wrap up. Let's wrap up for now.